Welcome to Hamfest, everyone.
Hamfest has always been a leap of faith, a labor of love, and a call to action. There's a concert, a peace concert series of free concerts that take place in different Seattle parks every summer. It's been going on since the 1980s, and I was involved in the peace concert series, and we did a show in 1990 at Gasworks Park. There were a lot of people there, and a bunch of great bands were playing, and that was during the time when the first President George Bush and the first invasion of Iraq into Kuwait was just starting. The guy that was running the peace concert at the time, Don Glenn, who passed away just a year or two ago, he made a statement on the microphone that said it's really hard to do a peace concert when your government is preparing to go to war. You know, maybe we should just stay in the park until America's out of Kuwait. And so it sounds kind of crazy, but there was about 100 of us that decided to stay in the park that night that heard that and decided to do an occupation of Gasworks Park. And there was already a huge rainbow-striped Bedouin tent, a canvas tent that had been erected in the park called the Seattle Portable Outdoor Theater Tent. That was a tent at the Rainbow Gatherings every year. And so about 100 of us actually spent the night in that tent at Gasworks Park, and the next morning the security came, park security, and he says, you know, what's going on here? And we said, we're a political occupation. He laughed so hard, and he said, well, I'm gonna come back, and if you guys aren't gone, we're gonna tear that tent down with a tow truck. And so we moved everything from the tent, all the stuff that we had and everything, into the permanent structure at Gasworks Park, and we had a 6-month peace vigil there. And had rallies with like 5,000 people. And there were a lot of workshops and stuff. And so a guy was putting together a National Organization for Reforming Marijuana Laws kickoff, a Washington State Normal meeting. And so a bunch of us, about 40 of us, showed up for that meeting. And the guy putting it on was a no-show. And that's out of that group there. That's when the idea of doing HempFest started, came out, how it was birthed. So he said, well, let's do a HempFest. We got to do something, you know. And so the first HempFest happened at Volunteer Park in 1991. We had about 500 people. I remember going, dude, it's huge. Look at all the people. No idea what was going to be taking place almost 30 years later. And Jack Herer, the author of The Emperor Wears No Clothes, who's kind of the grandfather of the modern hemp movement, spoke. And that was really the beginning. We did 3 years at Gasworks, or excuse me, 3 years at Volunteer Park. We moved to Gasworks Park in 95 and had a huge event, or excuse me, 94. And then we've been at Myrtle Edwards Park since 1995, where we currently are now. And HempFest is the largest cannabis event in the world, largest annual protest event of its kind, and the largest annual free speech event in America.
There is plenty to still protest in cannabis. Cannabis is not free. We can throw a shorthand on it, such as legalization, which merely means someone gets to decide which is and is not appropriate social behavior. I came looking for freedom.
In the 1850s, the U.S. Dispensatory said this about cannabis. Extract of hemp is a powerful narcotic, meaning sleep-producing drug, causing exhilaration, intoxication, delirious hallucinations, and, in its subsequent action, drowsiness and stupor, with little effect upon the circulation. It is asserted also to act as a decided aphrodisiac, to increase the appetite, and occasionally to induce the cataleptic state. In morbid states of the system, it has been found to cause sleep, to allay spasm, to compose nervous disquietude, and to relieve pain. In these respects, it resembles opium, but it differs from that narcotic in not diminishing the appetite, checking the secretions, or constipating the bowels. It is much less certain in its effects, but may sometimes be preferably employed when opium is contraindicated by its nauseating or constipating effects or its disposition to produce headache and to check the bronchial secretion. The complaints in which it has been specifically recommended are neuralgia, gout, rheumatism, tetanus, hydrophobia, epidemic cholera, convulsions, chorea, hysteria, mental depression, delirium tremens, insanity, and uterine hemorrhage.
I'm Carrie Boyder, K-A-R-I, B as in boy, O-I, T as in I'm a member of Seattle HempFest core staff and a co-founder of the Patient Rights Network out of Montana. And we're here at HempFest celebrating, obviously, the great things that have happened, you know, legal marijuana in 11 states, 47 states that have some form of medical marijuana. But there's, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. And so even though we have made a lot of progress on those fronts, we still have families who are losing their children over cannabis, people who are losing their jobs over cannabis, people who lose their housing, being denied student loans, being denied organ transplants, being denied the right to breastfeed your children. There's all sorts of civil rights that we still don't have as cannabis consumers, up to and including here in Washington State, the right to grow your own marijuana, the only state that does not have that provision as part of legalization. So as long as we have things like that that need to continue to change, there will be a place for HempFest. Well, there's several ways. One thing is parents who choose to use CBD or THC or a combination of both for children who are very sick with cancer, epilepsy, Crohn's disease, a variety of illnesses. And anytime you are providing cannabis to a minor, some people will consider that child neglect. Depending on, you know, both the state and how their CPS bureau is working, but also the investigator themselves. You know, there's a lot of discretion with CPS. And so all it takes is one person reporting that you have exposed your child to cannabis, and then CPS can investigate, and that's how people lose their kids on that front. For example, in Oregon right now, there's a teenage girl with cancer who was sent home by her doctors basically to die because there was nothing else they could do for her, and her mom didn't feel that was a good enough answer and looked into CBD and started giving her child CBD, and there was some sort of emergency. She had to go in, and they found out about the CBD, and they have taken her child, her daughter, from her. She's in foster care right now. They've charged the mother with custodial interference and child neglect. The mother had to surrender herself to prison just on Thursday morning in Oregon, where, you know, it's legal, where there's, you know, so much cannabis being grown that there's an oversupply, and yet this woman can't give her child CBD only. And the same thing is happening in Idaho with a young man named Brandon. So that's one way. Another way is that expectant mothers or breastfeeding mothers who are cannabis patients and need this to survive and have made the choice that cannabis is a less toxic option than pharmaceuticals, or worse yet, just suffering through whatever the condition is, whether that's nausea and vomiting or that's chronic pain. And, you know, obviously that has an impact on a developing fetus or a breastfeeding child as well. You're going to release all sorts of endorphins in your body when you're dealing with chronic pain. So even if you choose to use nothing whatsoever, you're going to have an adverse effect if you have chronic illness that you're dealing with as a pregnant woman or as a new breastfeeding mother. And so, based on a lactation consultant who has a stigma about breastfeeding, or a nurse manager who feels that you should be tested for cannabis, or a social worker at the hospital, any of those people, again, can report you. And based solely on the fact that cannabis was in your blood, which, by the way, goes all the way back to 20 weeks of pregnancy in the cord blood.
My name is Aaron Bossett. I am the founder of Black Cannabis Commission, BCC. It's actually just a very alarming report that just came out by the ACLU in the last 24 hours about how somehow miraculously the legalization of cannabis came in about 2012, and the numbers started dropping for arrest of people in cannabis. Great numbers, great statistics, but rose for Black and brown men. In 2016, there was a spike in the arrest. The actual numbers for arrest of Black men is up since 2016, which is quite alarming. In just the state of Washington alone, there was 1,800 arrests in 2017 for weed. And that's simple possession. So that's not like the growers and the big distributor guys. That's just for simple possession. That's a mind-blowing number in a legal state. It's a tough build trying to build a social equity program in a position where people don't add in the money that is made in the arrest of these Black men. And it's wild when you really think about the numbers of cops still arresting people for something that it's what, 33 states have medical and or legal, I think it's total now. So more than half of the country is looking at cannabis in a different light. And just the history alone of what the war on drugs did to the Black community is staggering, man.
Nixon top aide John Ehrlichman told Harper's Magazine, quote, The Nixon campaign in 1968 and the Nixon White House after that had two enemies, the anti-war left and black people. You understand what I'm saying? We knew we couldn't make it illegal to be either against the war or blacks, but by getting the public to associate the hippies with marijuana and blacks with heroin, and then criminalizing both heavily, we could disrupt those communities. We could arrest their leaders, raid their homes, break up their meetings, and vilify them night after night on the evening news. Did we know we were lying about the drugs? Of course we did. End quote.
My son, Lance Glore, is in federal prison for Washington State legal medical marijuana. He's serving a 10-year federal sentence. And right outside the federal courthouse in Tacoma when this was going on, there was a big marijuana convention. And my son was totally state legal. He's appealed to the Ninth Circuit and to the U.S. Supreme Court. So he's has a pending clemency right now with President Trump. And, yeah, and his daughter, she's in college. She's 21, and she's mentally and emotionally and financially, you know, a mess. She doesn't have her dad. It's just not right. When you come here and you see all this going on, why is Lance in prison?
We know sometimes I get the question going, oh, HempFest, Seattle HempFest, you guys still doing that? Isn't it legal? You know, why is there any reason to do that? And I would just mention that cannabis is federally illegal right now. Arrests, believe it or not, arrests are still going up every year nationally, even though 11 states have done serious reforms. And there is currently a couple dozen Americans serving life in prison for cannabis. And we actually have adopted several of them, and we raised money for Jimmy Romans, for example, who received a life sentence for cannabis, and we put money on his prison commissary, as we also did for George Martorano, who was serving life, and Jeff Mazensky. They have both since gotten out, and we helped actually in their release by generating letter-writing campaigns and stuff like that. But, you know, you can't deny that there's 100,000 people in one spot all demanding a change to the laws. It's undeniable. And I like to say that HempFest is not only a demonstration against prohibition, it's also a demonstration of what the cannabis community is capable of holding a world-class community event for 27 years in a row, and we can put our accident, arrest, and injury stats against any other event of our size or larger in the world.
This year, the HempFest is no pot prisoners. And so what we are here, if you can see, we have all these images of all these pot prisoners. So we've got letters for people to sign. We've got, we have a dunk tank over here. We've got Eddie Lepp, who just spent 10 years in federal prison. He's going to get dunked at 215 to the highest bidder. And then at 420, we're having a celebration because a couple of our lifers, one of them in particular, who was serving a 20-year de facto life sentence, he had a brain tumor. He was getting raped and beat in prison. We got last year, this year, Seattle HempFest, we got over 300 letters signed and sent them to the pardons attorney, and about a couple days ago we found out that he was granted clemency. So here in about at 420, we have a big sheet of cake. We're celebrating. We also have three other people who are serving life sentences that we're celebrating their freedom for, who got recently out of their life sentences. The federal government still hasn't released our prep prisoners regardless of the state laws that we have put in place for ourselves to follow. Yeah. Like my father, he died in federal custody after he followed all the state laws in Montana. He owned five different medical marijuana stores. Because the state laws were different than the federal laws, they didn't let the state laws in the courtroom. And cannabis is still a Schedule I drug, like heroin. So he basically had to die shackled to a bed. I had to take him off life support while he was chained to the bed, while guarded by two guards, and while my mother was in prison, who had been married to my father for 36 years, because she worked for the company. That happened in 2011, so I've been coming here ever since, and we all fight. We all, everybody here at this booth today, a lot of them, not everyone, but a lot of them have been through the drug war. A lot of them, family members have been incarcerated, or we've went to jail or something, so yeah. We're raising commissary money. Freedom Grow is a nonprofit 501c3, so we can legally do things here to help our prep prisoners now. It's a big celebration for us, that in itself.
Oh, wonderful.
I'm Stephanie Landa, and I formed Freedom Grow, and I'm here because the government gave me 5 years in federal prison. And after I got out, I realized you have to have money if you're in prison. Now, I had my own money, so it didn't affect me as much as it affects everyone else in there. So I thought, well, what am I going to do? I need money for these people that I left there, because I only did 5 years. They're doing life without parole, a lot of them, for non-violent offenses. So I decided that people should give me money, and since I'm, like, really honest and I put 100% on the people's books, they should give me money and I'll do this. So Organa Brand was our first big donation like a year ago, and they gave us $25,000. Oh my God, I went from having a cup asking people for money, selling slushies, selling hot chocolate, anything to get these people money. I mean, they would like say to me, they would get $50 and they'd say things like, oh my God, I haven't smiled in 20 years. Now, what can you say to them? Like, what could be your response except, here's all my money. So I, whenever you give me money, I round up. I send like thousands of dollars at $50 a person, and then I start over again after I go through my entire list of 100 people.
How can people donate?
Okay, freedomgrow.org is how you can donate. We have like a donate button, you push it, and it's really easy, and then we'll put it right on somebody's books. If you want to specify, I'll do it to certain people. If you don't, then it's whoever comes next on the list. But everybody's worthy. And at Christmas time, if you're feeling really good, at Christmas time, freedomgrow.org, we put $50 on every kid's books that the people are in prison, and still their kids are going to get a present from them.
My name is Elvi Musica, and I'm one of two people in the entire United States who actually has a prescription for medical marijuana. And we have a big problem with homeless in the entire country, and I really believe that at least 70% of the people who are homeless today are there because of bad laws that hurt good people. And that is marijuana. People got thrown in jail for months, years, whatever, but they also have a record, a criminal record, and today when they want to apply for a home loan, they can't get it because they have a criminal record. And nobody that just gets thrown in jail for marijuana has done anything to deserve our particular jails on top of it all. So disgrace, all of it. And so to continue this prohibition, to be a part of it in any way by just accepting it, I'm sorry, but I have a problem, because if you're not part of the solution, you are the problem.